Hi, I'm John O'Donnell, and I'm a Microsoft ISV Architect Evangelist, and I'm here today with Robert. Robert, can you introduce yourself?
Hi, I'm Robert DiCrescenzo, and in my spare time, I like to program video games.
So, tell me a bit more about this, because you're not the average hobbyist video game developer. You're certainly not spending the majority of your time coding in C++ or C#. Instead, you've got proven expertise in developing all the way down to the metal in assembler, and specifically 6502. So maybe you could just start with, tell the audience, how did you get into programming in assembler compared to, basic programming or something?
Yeah, I started fooling with assembler really in about 1986 on my Apple IIc, making little utilities, moving memory, user input, stuff like that. Apple IIc also uses a 6502,
okay,
processor. About 2001, I discovered a site that had the 8-bit, the old 2600, 5200, 7800, 8-bit information on it. And I stayed on the site. I started doing hacks in the beginning, just hacks of existing games.
Was that for the Atari 2600 that you talked about?
Yes, the 2600 we started with.
So this has to be, the 2600, it has to be probably the hardest game console to program for, because you literally are, as the books say, you literally are keeping up with the electron beam, basically building up the screen on the television.
That's correct, and that's kind of why I moved away from it.
Nice.
It was a little too involved for me. I gravitated toward the 7800 because, that's the one I did not have back in the day. I had the 2600, 5200. And it also, not many people were doing it then at the point I started with,
right,
around 2005, when I started with that. Thirdly, it didn't have a port of my favorite game, Pac-Man.
Okay.
So I had to do it.
Right. So with that being said, I mean, what are some of the capabilities that you like about the 7800 console?
Well, one of the things is the fact that you don't have to worry about the beam at every single scan line.
So you're not having to write code that literally keeps up with the beam on the TV. It's a totally different programming system on the 7800.
Yeah, it's a little more forgiving in that way. It takes care. There's a processor called Maria that takes care of the video.
So this is almost like a graphics coprocessor, isn't it? It's almost like having a GPU, we're talking about in the 80s, 1980s.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. So what are some of the unique abilities of the 7800 in terms of colors, in terms of sprites? Just, because there's a lot of people today who have never played with 8-bit consoles. Maybe they're using an Xbox at home. So they're used to high definition displays with millions of colors. So maybe you could give us a bit of a spec breakdown of the 7800.
Well, the 7800 has a couple different modes. It has a 160x192 mode.
So that's 160x190 pixels, yeah?
That's correct.
Okay.
And you have set 8 palettes of colors. The 160x192, you can do either 4 color or 12 color.
Okay.
And it's called 160A for 4 color, 160B for 12 color.
What about in terms of sprites? I mean,
you have it specializes in moving sprites around the screen. You can have many more sprites with no flicker than you could on most other systems at the time.
Okay.
The only limitation was the amount of Maria time, the CPU time that you have.
So you're not just building up expertise on programming the 6502 processor, but also interacting with the Maria video coprocessor, and
yes,
keeping the two in sync. So with that being said, I mean, certainly for the people listening, you can imagine it's obviously very time intensive to get a game up and running, but I assume, like any computing system, once you've developed some routines, some graphics routines, some sound routines, you almost build up your own library so you can start to develop games faster. I know specifically actually with you, I almost think of you as a bit of a game factory, because it's almost like you haven't it you pretty much get one game out and then a few weeks later you're announcing that you're working on another one. So you're almost like a video game creation machine at this point.
A lot of times I actually start more than one at a time.
That's right.
Once you have routines that you're familiar with that you know work, just like any other language, when you use object-oriented language, when you have routine written or a module written that you know works, you use it.
Yeah.
And you tend to do that. I'm sure most programmers tend to do that and put them aside. Like I used. Well, I used for one game in particular a routine that I'm using for another one, which I actually put on the back burner. But you used routines.
Well, certainly I remember obviously when I was a lot younger, getting the chance to play on a 2600 console. Never got the chance to play on a 7800. And in all honesty, it wasn't until I saw your posts on the Atari Age forums. And started to take a look at some of the code that you were writing, and frankly was stunned, because today you are writing games on the 7800 platform, which pretty much exceed the commercial releases way back in the day. I've got quite an extensive collection here myself, and the majority of them are actually games that you've written. So I'm a really big fan of what you're doing. But with that being said, I'm also curious. How are you developing the graphics, and how are you developing the sound? Are you doing them yourself, or you're using maybe one of your gaming colleagues to do this, or how's that working?
First, thank you very much for the compliments. And secondly, it depends on the situation. I'm working on a side-scroller right now where I knew that I wouldn't be able to do the graphics well enough, so I'm working with somebody else on that same site. Who's doing the graphics, and I'm doing the game coding and the levels and stuff like that. I actually had somebody else do a level editor just to make it easier for me to create the levels.
Okay.
As far as the music, I'm actually a musician also, so it's a little bit easier for me because all I do is if I have the soundtrack or something I have to create, I pull out the guitar and play what I have to play and then write down the notes, translate them to the Atari, either Pokey or Tia, whatever I'm using, and
you're not only just sometimes creating your own graphics, sometimes using a third party, also creating your own sound, but ultimately on the 7800 platform, you will even build the cartridges before and then ship them out.
Yes.
so you literally are almost like a one man game factory. So it's just awesome. And to be perfectly honest with you, I recognized the talent in the retro game development community probably about 2 years ago now, and literally spent the best part of, I literally spent, pretty much my spare time, maybe 12 months, actually reaching out across the retro game community to see if anyone would have interest in taking a look at the Windows Phone 7 platform, and with the idea of getting some of those games and actually recreating them on the Phone 7 platform using XNA. And when I reached out to you, you quickly embraced the idea. So maybe let's switch tracks a bit and talk to me about what your thoughts are on the Phone 7 platform and just for the device itself.
I enjoyed it. I already knew C#.
Okay.
From my day job. And being that I knew assembler, it was an easy transition for me. So I liked the examples. There were examples on Microsoft's website that were easy to follow. It was just a pleasure to work with. Actually, I got my first game finished kind of quick.
Right.
Because of all that.
So tell me a bit about the game, because you've obviously launched your first game into the market. Tell us a bit about that. We will obviously link to the game in the marketplace when we post this video. But just give us a walkthrough about what the game is like.
It's based on the old circus theme where you're a clown and you have a teeter totter and you have to pop balloons at the top of the screen. The place where it's different is there are you have each balloon could let down a power up because a lot of people like power ups.
Right.
And it'll give you a safety net. It'll stop the balloons from moving. It'll speed them up. It'll give you points. I mean, there's a couple of different things that could happen if it releases a power up. There's also a boss balloon.
Just like the big balloon comes along. So you actually just use a massive balloon as a boss. I mean, when I saw that, I just laughed because I was kind of playing the game, getting better at it, and then finally saw the boss, and then this big balloon comes along, and of course you're bouncing off it. So it's just a lot of fun.
Thank you. Yeah, it's as you progress, it gets more difficult. The balloons get faster, and once you hit a certain point, you have two boss balloons that you have to take care of at the same time. So it definitely gets harder as you get better. So hopefully it's a lot of fun.
I guess my final question would be, people who are watching this will think, you know what, I've never really done that much programming before, but I have some ideas for games. I mean, do you have any advice you would give, you know, a new person who wants to get into doing video game development?
Just try it. Follow the demos.
Yeah.
Do what they tell you to do. You'll get the first one done, and then you can take it from there. It's really not as hard as you think it is.
Excellent. Okay, well, thanks for talking to me today, Robert. And I said we'll link to this video, but I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.